This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Apple is one of the richest companies in history, but it doesn't pay anything close to its fair share of taxes in the countries from which it generates enormous profits. While the tax evasion strategies that Apple uses are currently legal in most countries, they are far from ethical and leave huge holes in national budgets. The European Commission has taken steps to address this problem in Europe. Recently, it has ruled that Apple has to pay up to 13 billion euros in taxes. James Henry is the author of The Blood Bankers, Tales from the Global Underground Economy. He is also a senior advisor for the Tax Justice Network. And James Henry joins us by phone to discuss the Commission's decision. Hello, Jim.
Good to be with you.
First of all, how did the European Commission determine that 13 billion euros is the amount that Apple owes?
Well, Ireland already has a very low 12.5% corporate income tax rate. That's about half or less of what the average rate in the EU is among the 28 members of the EU. And it's about a third of the U.S. rate, which is 35 to 39%. So they looked at that rate, which is available to everyone that would set up a company in Apple in Ireland, and they compared that with what Apple actually got under this very special deal, which was available to no one else, which allowed them to pay as little as 0.005% corporate income tax rate on the offshore profits that they were channeling through Ireland. As of last year, they had passed about $200 billion of profits, not only from Ireland, but all over Europe and the rest of the world, through a couple shell companies that they set up in Ireland that were essentially taxable nowhere, citizens of nowhere, for tax purposes. So it was this unusual scheme that the Europeans and the European Commission's Competition Commission looked at, and they said this is essentially singling out one company for a very special form of state aid in violation of the EU's rules.
So why did the European Commission then go after Apple rather than the government of Ireland?
The long-standing strategy of being a kind of corporate tax haven, and they've also apparently cut these secret deals with companies like Apple. We don't know about these deals except for a set of hearings by Senator Levin in the United States Senate. Permanent Investigation Subcommittee back in 2013 had gone into the Apple detail and grilled the Apple CFO, and they found out about these arrangements, and that's how the EU really learned about them and started investigating. Now they have investigations of up to 30 other companies, multinationals, that have been playing the same kind of games in Europe, not only in Ireland, but also Luxembourg and the Netherlands, where they have special arrangements. But Apple's the first and probably the largest.
Assuming the European Commission, they managed to collect these 13 billion euros, is that money going to go to the EU, or will that money go to the government of Ireland, or will they be shared?
Well, in the first instance, they actually offered it to Ireland to keep the money, and this led to a big debate within Ireland that's ongoing. I mean, this is bigger than Ireland's national health care expenditure. And Ireland, by the way, owes about $40 billion to the EU for the aid it got in the 2008 financial crisis, about $5 billion to the IMF for the bailout. So Ireland has been receiving a lot of money from the EU. But the EU said, you know, in the first instance, Ireland can keep the money. It's really, I think, the kind of financial elite in Ireland that has made a business out of the tax haven industry that wants to reject this and join Apple in the appeal. But a lot of other ordinary Irelanders, feel Irish people, citizens, taxpayers, feel they need the money. If other members of the EU, like Germany or the UK, do their own investigations of Apple, then any assessments that they would make would be probably charged against this overall finding. Anyway, this is the this is kind of in process because Apple has said it's going to appeal, and that appeal could take up to 6 years. So it'll be some time before we know how this all turns out.
So how do companies like Apple and Google, Pfizer, and so on, what sort of mechanisms do they use to avoid paying taxes in Europe?
Well, there's quite a few different games that are playing. In Apple's case, I mentioned the two shell companies that essentially set up in Ireland to channel all their offshore profits from businesses all over the planet outside the United States. Another game that's played by companies, especially in the software and the pharmaceutical industry that have intellectual property, patents or software or brands, is to park these intellectual property assets in offshore havens like Bermuda and Ireland and then pay themselves royalties tax-free. So that's a game that some players have played. Facebook had an Irish company that was parking all of its sales in the UK, and there was recently a deal between the UK and Google that got a lot of criticism. This is, there are other games. We've seen a lot of offshoring, so-called corporate inversions in which U.S. companies like Burger King and Chrysler, now owned by Fiat, have been setting up their headquarters in places like Canada or Luxembourg, and then essentially for tax purposes, those subsidiaries in Luxembourg will then lend money to the parent companies back in the U.S. and essentially do asset stripping, charging themselves interest and then stripping out all the profits, so it lowers the amount of tax they'll pay in a high-tax jurisdiction like the U.S. So there's huge armies of corporate lawyers and accountants who spend their lives doing this stuff, and it's hard to summarize in any one scheme as saying that's it. But the OECD has been looking at all these schemes over the last 4 years and has come up with something called the BEPS report, Base Shifting and Profit Erosion. A bunch of different recommendations for dealing with this systematically across borders to put an end to the kind of tax competition that's been going on since the 1980s among major countries.
I hear terms like shell companies and offshore tax havens all the time, and honestly, I'm not entirely sure I understand what they mean. So Apple then would be still based in California, but only on paper would they have an office in Ireland just for the sake of being able to take advantage of the tax laws in Ireland. Is that right?
Well, they set up two Irish LLCs that would concentrate all of their non-U.S. sales and operations. Then by special negotiation with Ireland, the headquarters of that company, since it's in Cupertino, California, it's not managed in Ireland. It's not, therefore, subject to any Irish taxation, and they were allowed to allocate international sales to this entity. In the case of intellectual property, some of the schemes involve paying royalties from these Irish companies to Bermuda or Cayman Islands subsidiaries that are not taxable based on the intellectual property that's been licensed to those offshore subsidiaries. And then there's a special rule that allows, there used to be, this gets a little technical, but I did take the international tax course at Harvard Law, so from Stan Suri, who wrote all these rules back in the 1970s. There's something called subpart F income, and if you really want to understand this, you have to get into this, but in 1997, the Clinton administration adopted a rule that allows companies that are like the Apple subs in Ireland to basically avoid the passive income tax that would be applied by subpart F through a rule called check the box. So you can Google all these things and find out more than you'll ever want to know. But it was basically this check-the-box regulation that was adopted by Secretary of the Treasury Rubin back in 1997 that sort of opened the gateways to all these offshore schemes, allowing stacks of subsidiaries to be piled up and then pass money back and forth without triggering the subpart F taxation for offshore passive income by U.S. companies. So that's a very brief synopsis of some of the schemes, but I invite your listeners to go to taxjusticenetwork.org and read all about the various schemes that are in play here.
What sort of benefit do countries like Ireland get from attracting Apple to Ireland, even though Apple isn't going to be paying much in the way of tax to them?
Well, they got, in this case, about 5,000 jobs. I'm not sure how many of those would be in Ireland anyway. It works out to about £220,000 per employee, Apple employee. But it's no question that the intellectual property that Apple is benefiting from, and all of the sales that it's selling offshore, have virtually nothing to do with these 5,000 employees in Ireland. I mean, this is really very much like the system that the U.S. Had domestically back in the 1950s, when domestic companies like Sears and Roebuck or General Motors would have sales in New York or sales in California, and they would pass them all to captive companies in Delaware and park all the sales there. And over the last 50 years, we have domestically we've developed a system called formulary apportionment with unitary taxation among the 50 states. And so we now, companies now divide up their U.S. sales based on formulas that have something to do with actual real activities in the states that they're making sales in. So they will look at employment or assets or the volume of sales they have in order to divvy up the, for purposes of state income taxes. On the international system, we have no such formulary apportionment. So you have companies still able, even though they have no activity, real activity in places like Bermuda or limited activity in Ireland, to allocate, gobs of offshore income to these places. And then under U.S. tax law, they're allowed to keep it completely tax-free until they repatriate the income to the United States. So there's about $2.4 trillion offshore of U.S. multinational income sitting there tax-free by virtue of these rules, and paying very little tax in the countries that they're operating in either.
What sort of benefit do the elite, the top 1 or 10% of income earners get from these tax loopholes?
Well, this is a big, employment generator for professional service firms, accounting firms, lawyers that are resident in these places, and the banks that handle these transactions. Most of the havens I've looked at that are involved in corporate tax dodging, they're basically a tiny elite that's benefiting. It's not generating lots of jobs for thousands and thousands of people. The haven industry, some countries have gone after, is really they end up with kind of letterbox companies that don't have a lot of real business in the companies in the countries that they're targeting. So those people who have proposed that the U.S. be a tax haven, or an even greater than one that it is now, right now, should really consider this. It's not a not a really strong growth generator. It's at the end of the day, actually, I think a diversion from the real activities of these companies. They should be focusing on, technology and design, and that's what Apple. That's how Apple became a great company in the first place, not by tax dodging.
What's been the reaction from the U.S. government on this ruling?
Oh, well, this is an election year, and we have the best politicians money can buy, and sort of not unexpectedly, they have tried to portray the EU decision as, a money grab. This is actually very misleading. I mean, the EU is kind of doing us a big favor here by helping to shut down these schemes on the margin. This is money that the EU, that EU members like Ireland should have been collecting under any measure of fair taxation. If they'd collected the taxes at a fair rate to begin with, rather than this 0.005% rate, they could have claimed, Apple could have claimed credit against the U.S. tax payments that it makes, and do what it will do now. So, you know, it wasn't, it isn't as if they're taking our money. It wasn't U.S. money to begin with. They would have gone to the tax credit had had the Irish government not violated its code of conduct with the EU, which prohibits this kind of discriminatory secret aid to specific companies.
The fact that the EU is has acted at all seems very encouraging. What else do you think needs to be done to achieve a bit more tax justice?
Well, it's kind of bilateral action on the part of the EU. I think you know, they're going to be making more cases here. They've already made a few announcements. They had a ruling against 35 multinationals that were abusing Belgium's tax rulings, special tax rulings. They went after Starbucks, and I think on the margin they'll be taking a look at companies like IKEA and Amazon. But really, the the systematic response to this is for countries to get together and support the OECD's efforts to crack down on this practice across borders. And it's it really requires tax collaboration among the major countries. We've had round after round of tax cutting. Canada cuts its tax rate to 23%, and the EU, the UK cut its tax rate to 18% and is talking about going down to 15%. In the US, we've had no reductions in the nominal rate, but because of all these games, you now have the federal tax share of federal tax revenues that's collected from the corporate income tax down to kind of an all-time low of 8%. It's, less than payroll taxes. So over time, this has resulted, this kind of race to the bottom among countries is really reducing the progressivity of the income tax system. And I think to restore that, just to have fair taxation across borders, we have to have some reasonable rules about what minimal corporate taxes should be paid by giant companies across borders. This is something that small business has nothing to gain from. They're competing with these folks on the margin, and most of them are not using these kinds of games offshore. So it's really an interest of interest, I think, to small and medium-sized enterprise in the United States, as well as to the middle class and people who can't avoid taxes by using these games to get this under control.
Well, I know tax law often is dry as dust, but frankly, this has been fascinating. Thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us.
Well, yeah. Delighted. And, there's $200 billion a year at stake here, so it's real money to real people, and especially the rest of us who are not able to take advantage of these special games.
Indeed. Thank you again.
Great. Good to be with you.
I've been speaking with James Henry. He is the author of The Blood Bankers, Tales from the Global Underground Economy. He is also a senior advisor for the Tax Justice Network. And you can read more about this case at taxjustice.net.